talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. If you could pick anybody, can't pick the quarterback, who would be the most valuable piece to break out this season? Blankers has Stingley. I went Grenard. What say you? 713-780-ESPN. Somebody said Nico Collins. Somebody said either running back, return of the Mac, or Damian Pierce. Who was the one that you said, Brendan? You ultimately went Grenard, but you threw out another name too, right?
Before the show, I don't think so. I just mentioned either receiver.
Either receiver. See, I'm not anti-receiver because I think receiver matters more than running back today in this day and age in the NFL. I just want receivers before they hit that $40 million.
No, no doubt.
And I want my quarterback to elevate the receiver position. I think it's critical.
See, but to your point earlier, I'm with you. I want to be the team that's trading that receiver instead of paying that receiver like the Chiefs did, like the Packers did. But I'm also in the camp that when you do such a thing like that, that you replace them with a veteran and not the receiver room that I see in Green Bay.
Don't you want your quarterback elevating a good receiver to a great receiver, though, versus a bad receiver to a good
receiver? I'll give you the exact response to that, though. You don't want Aaron Rodgers targeting Davante Adams 80% of the time and not bettering the rest of the receiver room.
That's different.
That's part of it. It's Patrick Mahomes who realizes how good Tyreek Hill is. But you got to throw to your tight end. You got to throw to other receivers, and you spread the football around. Therefore, defenses can't concentrate either. When you see the stats and the analytics and say he targeted him 80% of the time, that's ridiculous.
See, I think it's a great case study for this conversation is what Aaron Rodgers does this year and what Pat Mahomes
for
does
sure.
this year.
Yep.
If Pat Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers don't see a drop-off in their production, why are we trading first-rounders and then spending $40
million? Now you're getting into the running back conversation and the way it's changed in terms of how much do you value, where do you take a running back, and how much you pay him.
Let's phrase it like this. And look, I know quarterbacks are more important than wide receivers, so it's not like a tit-for-tat conversation. But who do you expect to have a bigger drop-off because they're, you know, without a receiver or the receiver left? Do you expect Rodgers and Mahomes to have a bigger drop-off, or do you expect Davante Adams and Tyreek Hill to have a bigger drop-off?
Other receivers.
Absolutely.
Yep.
That's why I don't look at a receiver as a $40 million position trade a first-round draft pick for. Now, I'm not trying to diminish the value because they are important, but I'm not spending $40 million
on my cap. And I'll also say this. Credit to them. Get yours while you can. So while the market is hot, you go and get your money. That's why you see these other guys trying to cash in, too, from Terry McLaurin to Debo.
Debo, yeah, he has not rescinded his trade.
And Brown, and the reason why he got out of Tennessee, and all these different guys. The reason why is you got to get it when you have the opportunity to get it because you may never get it again. And the reason why you may not get it again is after this season, you're right. We may see it dictated where it's more and always has been about the quarterback and him being able to make everybody better than it is about you elevating the offense because of one receiver's ability to play.
Look, I'm not trying to diminish the receiver position. I guess I am just kind of by default. I still think it's important. I still think it's a good position to have, but I look at it more of, like, if I had to pick one, great quarterback or great receiver, it is a no-brainer that it's the quarterback, and I don't think you need a great receiver to elevate a great quarterback, where I think it's the other way around. For a receiver, or sometimes to bring in a receiver at that level to help a mediocre quarterback. Like, we all, like David Carr's brother, I think we look at him as like a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. I think he's somewhere around that point. I also think he's probably coming off the best season he's ever had. I'm not sure we're looking at Carr as a top 10 quarterback last offseason. Heck, he might not ever be that again. We expect he will because of Devontae, but they feel like Carr needs help. Same thing with Tua. We have conversations on whether or not Tua is going to be a good NFL quarterback, and we're on two different sides with that. But I don't think either one of us view Tua as a top 10 quarterback. So why did they bring in Tyreek? To elevate the quarterback. To me, it's the other way around. You should have the quarterback that's elevating the receivers.
Here's the other thing, though, Jeremy. You got to take into consideration with all that gets more credibility to your quarterback. You also have to have a quarterback that's got enough guts and mental toughness to be able to say, I don't care who you think you are and how much money you're making. I've got to make the right play for this football team because you're going to get those guys that got those contracts that are coming back to the huddle going, you need to get me the damn ball because I'm open and I need the ball because I need to prove that I'm worth this money and I got to get mine. And as a quarterback, you're going, you know what? That's all fine and dandy, but if I get another guy that's wide open, I'm taking that and you'll have to deal with it. There's not a lot of mental toughness in what I look at in Derek Carr. There's not those kind of guys that are able to push back on a receiver. When, and you can go up and down. We can go Antonio Brown if you want to go way off the deep end, and Terrell Owens, and all the way to Keyshawn Johnson to throw me the damn ball. Quarterbacks also have to have the toughness to say, I get it, you thought you were open, I got to do what's best for this team.
A lot of times it's the decoy that's best, right? You have all the attention on an elite wide receiver one, sometimes better to go the other way. And look, the Patriots may not be the best example to use here, but who was the best wide receiver with the Patriots winning Super Bowls? Like, before Mike Evans and before Godwin, whenever they were winning it in Tampa Bay?
Julian Edelman?
I mean, that's just a guy. Like, Edelman was very good. He was very good. He produced very well.
It's the reason why they're talking about him in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
Because of the Super Bowls he won while being utilized the right way by the Patriots. He wasn't spectacular.
Yeah, and it's a little bit... It's kind of a sneaky way of me phrasing that, too, because the best team the Patriots ever had was probably the one that got to the Super Bowl
with
Randy Moss.
The Randy Moss team, yeah.
But they also won their Super Bowls without elite wide receivers. I'm not sure you need elite wide receivers in the NFL. I think you need elite quarterback a little bit more. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Which Houston Texan would be the most valuable to have a breakout season? Somebody trolling us saying Kyahmi Fairbairn. Don't send us your trolls. 713-780-3776. We'll let Brendan look through all those. 713-780-ESPN. How about Tytus Howard, finally?
Yeah, that would help, especially because of the fact you got to make a big decision with him coming up in a year's time in terms of his contract. But again, if he proves to be, you know, a very, very steadying force and a solid right tackle, we already know he's filled in well at left tackle, too. But you know that if you can just find him a home and keep him there, that you've got one less position on the offensive line to worry about, and he's still young, then if you lose Tunsil in a year or two, so what? Because now you can just go get yourself what you need. It's easier to find your left tackle in a lot of ways, and you can continue to build a young offensive line that's going to be with you for the long haul.
Throw another one into the equation of what I find to be an acceptable answer, because I thought it was Stingley and Grenard. I'll throw Tytus into that mix. I mean, if Tytus becomes a top five tackle, I mean... You have the bully. Either if it's left tackle or right tackle, you have protection for if the quarterback is Davis Mills because he takes off, or if you go out to get another one. Like, you're building around that quarterback position, which I think is something that's good to have. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So I ran across something on that Jim Trotter put out for NFL.com, talked about, you know, NFL teams that will improve the most in 2022. He thinks the Broncos will improve the most, which it's hard to disagree. They just brought in Russell Wilson. But do we think the Texans will improve at all? Whenever we look at the win total, because this is a conversation
that we have. Is that how we're judging the
improvement? It is win total. We're looking at only the win total. Because we're all on the same page, I believe, that the Texans are better across the board in 2022 than they were in 2021. Hope the legal department is in better shape this year than they were last year. But do we think that the Texans will win more in 2022 than the four wins they had in 2021?
From a record standpoint, and if we're judging it on wins and losses, I don't. I think they're going to be about the same. I think, and I'm happy with that. I think they're going to win about four or five games. And you look at the Vegas odds, and it falls right into the realm of that, depending on if you take the over or the under. So I think, and that's exactly where I think they should be from a win and loss perspective. But yeah, my bigger thing is, am I going to see improvement in the running backs? Yes. Am I going to see improvement in the receivers? I should. Am I going to see improvement from a quarterback? Well, that remains to be seen. We just got done talking about the offensive line being better. We know defensively, because of the young players that they added, from safety to linebacker to corner, and then some of the free agents that they kind of sprinkled in as well, they're going to be better. On paper, in the locker room, on the roster, they're better. Does that translate to wins and losses for another year? I don't think so.
I'm going no on this one. And I think Vegas backs us up a little bit here as well. That, you know, they're going to, the Vegas total right now for the Texans is 4.5. So, you know, you can't win a half a game in the NFL, so you got to go one way or the other. 4 wins, 5 wins is what Vegas predicts that the Houston Texans are going to have. And I also think that the division is better. I think the Titans, I don't think are going to be the best record in the AFC like they were a year ago, but they're still going to be leaps and bounds better than you. So I don't think that that's going to be a situation where you're getting wins. Same thing with the Colts. The Colts look like they've upgraded, if we're being completely honest. Everything else looks the same, and now they brought in Matt Ryan, who we consider to be a better quarterback than Carson Wentz. So the Colts look a little bit more difficult as well. Then you throw in the Jacksonville factor, and we can talk about how Jacksonville overspent, and I think that they did. I'm not arguing that they didn't. But whenever you overspend, it means you're overspending on quality players. So I think the Jacksonville's got a better roster than they did a year ago. They have Trevor Lawrence in the second year. So is Davis Mills. But then you upgraded at head coach so much, I think Jacksonville is going to be better. And, oh, by the way, Jacksonville's playing a last-place schedule while you're playing a third-place schedule because you finished in third place in the AFC South. I don't think it translates into wins.
But also don't discount, though, from a positive standpoint for the Texans. They got a better offensive coordinator, in my mind, than Tim Kelly.
I would
agree.
Because
he'll open it up, and they'll give you a chance to do more things. But while you try new things and try to do different things, you're going to make mistakes. It might hurt you in the short term until everybody gets accustomed to do it on how to execute it in the long term.
Somebody texting in about our conversations about wide receivers and quarterbacks, 5535. Problem is there isn't enough good QBs to elevate everyone around them. Got to try a different approach and put the best you can around mediocre quarterbacks to help the team. Look, I don't necessarily disagree with that. I just don't know if that gets you to the ultimate prize in the NFL, right? Like, I'm sure there's an example. There might even be a recent example. But what mediocre quarterbacks and really good receivers have been, you know, leading a Super Bowl championship team?
No, it just doesn't happen. I mean, you can go to the opposite side of it and just line up all the different teams. The latest example was, if you're Baker Mayfield and you started the season with Jarvis Landry and OBJ and two really above-average tight ends and a decent offensive line and two stud running backs, and you can't make the playoffs and you can't win games, I get it, he got hurt later, but all you heard up until he got hurt was those two guys bitching about the fact that you couldn't get them the football and you couldn't make the throws you needed to make. So you can see it fall flat on its face when you have a mediocre quarterback and really good receivers, as opposed to if you have a really good quarterback, you can make any receiver look better. You can throw them open.
Was Stafford in that? Would he be a mediocre quarterback that was helped out by his receivers?
No.
I wouldn't put him on that list either. I wouldn't put Brady in Tampa Bay on that list. Kansas City with Pat Mahomes, they're not on that list. New England won it prior to that with Brady again. The Eagles beating the Patriots, they had Nick Foles. But I also don't think they had great receivers.
I was trying to think of who their receivers that were above average were.
Their best receiver was probably their tight end. It was probably Ertz,
yeah.
Back when they were winning that Super Bowl. So, I mean, I think there's example after example. Patriots prior to that with Brady.
Had the guy that was with the Bears forever.
You're talking about a quarterback or receiver?
At receiver. Because I was trying to think who the receiver room was.
You talking about the Eagles?
Yeah, the Eagles, the year they won the Super Bowl. And I think he got hurt late in the year, but they had a couple of retreads.
Oh, you're talking about Alshon Jeffrey.
Yeah, Alshon Jeffrey.
Alshon Jeffrey was on that team. I'm not sure how much of it. He might have even been hurt by the time
they got
to the Super Bowl.
I think he got hurt by the time of the Super Bowl, but he had a really good regular season and into the playoffs.
I can't believe that team won a Super Bowl. Like, they had Nick Foles and then almost nothing else offensively, but they were putting up huge numbers. Like, it's kind of crazy when you look back at that. I think it has a lot to do with Doug Peterson.
They had the franchise quarterback for most of the year in Carson Wentz.
But that shows you how good Doug Peterson is. Doug Peterson, who many people look at Carson Wentz as like a failure in the NFL and chokes everywhere he goes and is a disappointment everywhere he goes. Doug stinking Peterson had that stinking quarterback playing at an MVP level.
Just the Philly special alone should make you realize, dude's got a pretty good grasp on the offense.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, he lost a little bit. I don't know if it had to do with the roster, but I'm very curious to see how his tenure in Jacksonville goes. 713-780-ESPN. Coming up next, does this series against the Yankees give you even more reason to want bullpen help? We'll discuss. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
5535 saying Joe Flacco is best I can think of as an example of a mediocre quarterback winning a Super Bowl. But he didn't. It's the second caveat to that, that they had elite receivers. Like, we're talking about recipe of average quarterback, elite receiver versus elite receiver and average, elite quarterback and average receivers. Like, Flacco was defense. Like, if we look at the Ravens, the reason that Flacco won a Super Bowl, large part, Flacco had a really good postseason. Let's not take away from Flacco's postseason. It was very good, but he didn't have an elite receiver. The defense was solid, and they had a really good running game. You go back to the first Ravens that won a Super Bowl, like Ray Rice and Trent Dilfer, they didn't have an elite receiver.
No, I'm thinking about...
Somebody said Eli, too. Like, Plaxico Burress, do you think he was an elite receiver? Was Plaxico better receiver than Eli was as a quarterback?
Like, Brad Johnson had Keyshawn and Keenan McCardell.
That's pretty good, but... Ooh. That might be the most recent one. Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying.
And even that team had amazing defense.
Oh, they had a great defense. That was Sapp and Derek Brooks coming off a defensive MVP and all the different guys that they had. They had Rondae Barber.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really, really good defense.
This calls for a Branham deep dive for the show tomorrow to see the last time an average quarterback with elite receivers and not an elite defense won a Super Bowl. I'm not sure it's happened in our lifetime. 713-780-ESPN.
Because you lost the MVP.
You talking about?
To get Nick Foles.
But they didn't have elite receivers.
But that wasn't a full season. That's right, and they didn't.
Didn't have elite receivers. I don't know how that team was scoring so many points. It's pretty amazing.
What was their running game like? Was that still Darren Sproles?
I think Sproles was probably on that
team. And
he
wasn't the starting running back per se. He was more like a gadget guy that they spread all over the field.
They had a pretty good running back, if I remember. But I can't remember. Was it Deuce Staley? Probably not.
No, I think it was after Deuce Staley.
Help us out. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Who was the running back on that team that...
Down the hallway and figure it out real quick because one of our network guys is a massive Philly fan.
This is LeGarrette Blount. LeGarrette Blount was the starting running back on that
team. He was on that team. I didn't know that he was a starter.
This is starting lineups for the Super Bowl. LeGarrette Blount was their running back. And Alshon Jeffrey was out. It was Nelson Aguilar and Torrey Smith and Zach Ertz. How in the world? No, Alshon Jeffrey did play that game. Okay. He did. I overlooked him. How in the world did that team score 41 points in the Super Bowl?
Against the Patriots defense, that wasn't bad.
Nick Foles was your quarterback. LeGarrette Blount was your starting running back. Jay Ajayi was your backup running back. Nelson Aguilar led you in receptions in that game. How in the world did that team score 41 points in a Super Bowl?
Nick Foles has maybe the most interesting career arc in sports history.
It's bizarre.
This man, because he had that one great season, I want to say, with the Eagles early in his career, too.
Yeah,
I have to look at the numbers, but he was like a stud for a year with the Eagles. Then he continued to suck. Then he had an incredible run in those playoffs, and then he sucked again.
Yeah, it's pretty – that's like one of the most egregious Super Bowl championship teams ever.
The most improbable, for sure, especially when they lost their big-name quarterback who was having an MVP season.
LeSean – people texting us in saying LeSean McCoy – they're asking us, was LeSean McCoy on that team? He wasn't.
No,
LeSean
he wasn't.
Left in 2014. He was with the Buffalo Bills for quite a while. Anyway, 713-780-ESPN is the Philadelphia Eagles create a hurdle in this show. But anyways, looking back at the series in the Bronx, the Gotham Gauntlet, by the way, not going so bad for the Astros. 4-2 so far through six games of the Gotham Gauntlet. We said that we would be incredibly happy with 5 wins, so they're a game away from doing that. But watching that series, it turned out to be a split. Astros really controlled all 4 games. Yankees get some heroics in game 1, heroics in game 4, rally late to win. Does this series give you even more reason to want some bullpen help for the Houston Astros?
I'm screaming for it. To me, the fact that Bregman looks like he's figuring it out and he continues to make improvements at the plate is more encouragement. The fact that Jake Meyers had a 2-hit game, that like Jake Meyers might not be all the way back yet, but he gives you hope that you're going to be able to stick with one consistent center fielder, so that's one less thing.
Higher ceiling,
the
right?
The way that Machete caught the entire series shows exactly why we've said all along they're not going to make a change with their frontline catcher when he does what he does to his pitching staff and makes them better by being out there, especially when you see the alternative, which needs to be put out to pasture as soon as possible. So I think that he's not going anywhere either. You worry about Yuli, but the number one priority, which has never changed for me, as you know, is now the fact that the bullpen is even more important. You can't go through stretches where you say, well, I've used these 3 guys. That means I either got to use these guys or my starter's got to go longer and I got to figure things out. This is a World Series caliber team. They need at least 1, if not 2 more arms in that bullpen that are veterans that can get the job done no matter what situation they're put into. And this team is going to be remarkably better than it even is now. That's why I think even more so than I've been honking the horn all year long on it, they've got to get bullpen help.
I don't necessarily disagree, but to argue the other side of it, the Astros do have the best bullpen ERA in all of baseball.
And again, I always tell you, there's a massive difference between when you play a 162 and based on where you are in the schedule and who you played so far, as opposed to when you're going into bright lights, big stage, playoff environment, winner, go home type stuff. Guys have a tendency to, if you know exactly what I'm talking about, shrink up a little bit, especially in those high-leverage situations.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. Yeah, and so I would be a little bit more concerned than just thinking that some of the guys at the back of the, like the lower end of the bullpen are guys I feel comfortable throwing out. Phil Maton's a guy that you know I've been on the fence for a long time on.
Mm-hmm.
And last year he was not great in the regular season, but he stepped it up in the playoffs.
Yep.
But when I look at what happened again this weekend, when I know that that's a team that you could face in a situation where the stakes are a lot higher, I don't have a ton of trust in my circle of trusted Phil Maton to where at least he's a veteran that can come in. I'd feel maybe better about Phil Maton in a guy that doesn't have to be involved in your seventh, eighth, or ninth.
See, I think that's kind of where I was going there, to argue the other side, because I don't necessarily agree with you either about like having the elite arms. Like, I would love a great elite left-handed hammer, like somebody like a left-handed donkey you could just go to late.
Was Andrew Miller for years. That guy?
Yeah, something like that. Like, Chafin was somebody we talked about in the offseason. Brad Hand always comes up whenever you talk about
he's
that.
He's about on the downside now, Brad.
Yeah,
Hand.
I think he's a little bit long in the tooth. But, everyday Rayleigh, you wish you still had him.
Bite your tongue right now.
You still wish you had daily Rayleigh.
Mouth.
But to argue the other side, like, yes, the Astro, you talk about, like, the elite arms, and, like, is there elite arms on this? Like, I think that the best arm's actually Brian Abreu, but you don't know
about. Arm-wise, absolutely. Yeah, but what's between the years might be the worst.
But here's where I'm going with this. The Astros still have the best ERA of any bullpen in all of Major League Baseball. So, like, it's more, to me, luxury than necessity. And then on top of that, if you look at the two games there's very natural excuses that come into play there. And, like, I don't want to make excuses for the guys. But anyways, Ryan Stressly, in the first game that he blew, he was pitching on the second game of a back-to-back. And I think we've seen at this point where Ryan Pressly's at, probably not suited to pitch back-to-back days. And, yeah, that does have its disadvantages, because if you get to the playoffs and you need somebody to, you know, lock down the ninth inning in game one, you would like to have them available in game two. I don't know if Ryan Pressly is going to be that guy, which is alarming if we're being completely honest with you.
That's another concern.
But he looked a lot different in game three than he did in game one.
Absolutely.
So it shows you that Ryan Pressly is capable of being that guy, just not being that guy every other day at this stage of his career. You point to Phil Maton, who did blow that game in the eighth, and I'll be honest with you, I don't have a whole lot of faith in Phil Maton, if I'm being completely honest. But the bullpen by that point was so taxed. Mm-hmm. Like, you had to use Rafael Montero early in the series, three straight games.
He sucked it up and gave you a third day. Yeah. That I'm not sure he was supposed to or should have, but he did.
And don't think that the guys in the locker room, the boys in the clubhouse, didn't notice that. Pitching 3 days in a row out of the bullpen.
If that's not the Yankees, I don't think that happened.
I don't think so either. So you had Phil Maton pitching a higher leverage situation than he's normally pitching. Like, you're not going to see Phil Maton in the eighth inning of a playoff game. But because of the state of the pitching staff and how taxed the bullpen was, you really had no choice. So that kind of, like, you have two built-in excuses there. You know, excuses are excuses. You don't want to use them. But arguing the other side, one of the things that I do want to see more, though, and I know we've had our disagreements about Brian Abreu and, you know, what we think of him. We both realize that Brian Abreu has elite stuff. Like, his fastball plays, his slider plays.
He has a $1 million arm, and maybe because of inflation it should be higher than that.
Yeah.
But there is no disputing his arm.
The issue that you have with him, which he has shown this over the course of his career, it's not really an unpopular opinion or not an opinion. I think it's even Dusty Baker has shown us he has this opinion of him, is that you worry about him with runners on base. You worry about him in big moments, high leverage spots. And Dusty hasn't really used him in high leverage spots. He came on to face Giancarlo Stanton for that one out in the third game of the series, I believe it was. No, it must have been yesterday. It was yesterday when he struck out Stanton. Good morning, good afternoon, good night. But I want to see Dusty Baker use him in higher leverage spots through the course of the regular season. Like, we need to find out who's right, Blankers or me. Like, we need to figure out if Brian Abreu can be somebody that's counted on in a high leverage spot in the sixth or seventh inning, or if he can't. And I feel like they need to throw him to the wolves to figure out if Brian Abreu can handle it.
Not against the Yankees, right? But I think that as we get down.
Why not give him the
eighth? Because these games mean a lot more.
I mean, they do, but they don't. Like, why not have Abreu in the eighth instead of Phil Maton?
But what I mean by that, too, Jeremy, is it's not just because it's the Yankees, what it means team versus team. It also means a lot more if you screw up against the Yankees, right? I mean, we look at it, what it did to Pressly alone. When you get a guy that's had the success of Ryan Pressly, but all of a sudden you got Mad Dog Russo and other pointing out the fact that he's always struggled against the Yankees, that he doesn't have great numbers in his career against the Yankees, and that's a veteran. Now you take a young, impressionable kid that we're worried about his mental as well as what he can do and testing him in high leverage situations, and he collapses against your biggest rival in the American League. That has a little bit more of a lasting impact. But when I look at it, you're right. Down the stretch from this point now till the end of the season, you definitely want to figure out who he is, because part of the reason why I'm as passionate about this as I have been all year is because we've seen this movie before. It's Josh James. Josh James had a $1 million arm. He had an electric fastball. Mm-hmm. He had other pitches that were effective in getting guys out. Josh James could never figure it out between the ears. And when he got in high leverage situations, he gave up baseballs that needed to have a stewardess on them because they got out of there so quickly. And he completely melted down. I don't need to see chapter two of Josh James, and I need to know what I have in Brian Abreu.
I want to make the case for Abreu in higher leverage situations when we come back. Also, a couple of areas of concern over this four-game series, the relief pitching, one of them. We'll see if Click does something about it. But two other areas of concern that I want to get to as well. 713-780-ESPN. We'll take your thoughts on it. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Talking about Brian Abreu, whose numbers have been very good. He's not been used in high leverage situations, and I feel like we both want an answer. You're not high on Abreu. I'm higher on Abreu than you are.
Let me state, don't say that. I'm not. It's not that I'm not high on him. I don't trust him at all, and I agree with you. I want to see what he's got.
I would say that's not high on him.
Well, I believe in his arm. I'm high on his arm. I'm just not high on what he does with it.
See, look, you might be right. But we need to see who he's going to be.
For sure.
Because his fastball is very good. His slider is very good. He made Stanton look like a silly fool yesterday. And Stanton strikes out a lot. He does that quite a bit. But we need to figure out if Abreu's like higher on the pecking order than Phil Maton, right? Like, we need to see if he can pitch a high leverage sixth inning. If Ryan Stanek and Hector Neris are down for the day because they've pitched back to back days, can he give you three outs in the seventh in a 1-run game? We got to figure out who he is. So I'm calling for Dusty Baker to use Brian Abreu in more high-leverage situations so we can figure out if he's somebody you can count on in high-leverage situations in the postseason or if he's just going to sit in the bullpen and wait for mop-up duty.
I would like to request that happens against the worst teams that they can face down the stretch, but I'm totally with you. I would rather know with the lead that they have in the division, they can afford to do those kind of things too. I would really like to know if there's something that can improve there. Because if you remember, again, the blueprint that I use with the movie we've seen with Josh James is he even went so far as Tony Sipp was calling him on his cell phone between appearances, trying to work it out with him so that he could try. And the psychologies and the mental coaches and all the things that they tried. And he just couldn't figure it out when he had high leverage or guys on base situations. And it never worked out for him. So if we can avoid that, but if there's ways to get him conditioned to be better than that, I'm all for it.
You got to let him sink or swim at some point. Mm-hmm. You have to figure out what you have. And Ole Paredes back up with the Astros, yeah. By the way. They sent down Brandon Bielak, which I find interesting because Overeasy is going to come back in like a week, week and a half, right? So now you're looking at making another change. Are you calling Paredes up for a week, week and a half? Or are you looking to send somebody else down?
Depending on what Click wants to do, there's a guy that has above average speed that was electric, that's got some playoff experience, that depending on what he doesn't want to do or how much he wants to go after arms in the bullpen before the deadline, there's a guy that could maybe replace one of those arms. If he comes in and can be good Paredes again,
uh-huh.
And have an above average fastball and a strikeout pitch, because he had control problems too. I mean, he had a hard time keeping it in the zone. As good as his stuff was, if he's figured it out and he can be effective, he's definitely going to be more effective for you because of the fastball alone than Bielak.
I'm wondering who's going to be the odd man out when Overeasy comes back, though. Like, it's either your options are either you send Anoli back down, which why would you bring him up in the first place? Seth Martinez or
Dusty
Abreu
seems to really like.
Yeah, I mean, he used him against Judge yesterday and gave up the home run. So that's something worth monitoring.
Yeah, but before that, he's been using him more. The ERAs kept going down until yesterday.
He had the second longest scoreless streak of any reliever before yesterday.
He would have gotten it unearned if he didn't have to give up a bomb.
Yeah, yeah, that was
unfortunate. If that ball doesn't get out of the park, he'd be okay.
So a very minor thing to look for. Whenever Jake Odorizzi gets called back up, who gets sent down? I think you're three most likely. You just send Anoli back down. But why are you bringing him up for Bielak, Seth Martinez, or Brian Abreu? But use Abreu in more high-leverage situations. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 8437 saying his main takeaways from the Yankee series in my eyes are, one, our starting pitchers can perform against the best teams in the league. Yeah, facts. I think that's one of the reasons that the Killer Bees thought that the Astros are legitimate World Series contenders as currently constructed. Two, to your point, we need to trade for one, maybe two reliable relief pitchers. Three, no more Jason Castro. And four, Dusty needs to learn not to pitch to the best player in the league during potential game-winning situations. Four is the one that scares me more than any of them.
Do we not think Joe Espada just isn't being listened to, or if he's speaking up, is he speaking up?
I mean, that's a tough situation. I wouldn't know unless you're in the dugout, but I would imagine that he's not speaking up. I would imagine.
See, I think that as much as Dusty doesn't let a whole lot of people in and has his own, obviously we know is his own ways of doing things, I would think you're not on his staff unless he doesn't trust your opinions. And I would think that sitting right next to Dusty, he's got to at least be firing that off to Joe and saying, this is what I think I'm going to do. And Joe doesn't have the confidence. I believe he would have the confidence to say, Dusty, can we think about this for a second?
Right, yeah.
Otherwise, why is he the bench coach?
I mean, because they value him. I think he's going to be the next manager of the Astros.
He knows he's got a job coming up wherever. He's either he's the heir apparent to the job here, or another team's going to hire him in the next year or two. So it's not like he's going to be looking for work. He should be able to speak up and say, I've been in baseball enough to realize I don't want to pitch to the best hitter in baseball twice now when I have other options.
But I mean, what are you going to tell Dusty? Hey, Dusty, I wouldn't pitch to Judge here. Like, but he's not. He might not listen to you.
Well, but he might not listen to you. But then that you have that in your back pocket that, hey, I told him, this is my opinion. It's still his right to overrule me and do whatever he's going to do. But at least I feel like I did my job by giving my honest opinion instead of just rolling over and going, whatever you want, Dusty.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to assign the blame to Espada because it is Dusty's team. Dusty is the manager of the team. But, yeah, I wish that Espada – I don't know if he's voicing his opinions or not. I wish more of Espada's thoughts would come to fruition and that they would use Espada a little bit more. All right. Looking back at this series and looking at the deadline coming up, no, we just went through our areas of concern. You talked about the relief pitching, two costly relief innings in which you blew a game. Presley on Thursday in Game 1, Ryan Stresley was at it. Can't pitch back-to-back games. Yesterday, Maton in the highest leverage situation he's been in quite some time in the eighth inning. Gave up a two-strike, two-out, game-tying home run. Not to Judge, not to Rizzo, not to Stanton, but to DJ LeMahieu. The managing is an issue. Dusty Baker, what he did in Game 1, what he did in Game 4. And then the runners in scoring position still a concern. Even though the Astros had an uptick offensively this series, you still want them to do better with runners in scoring position. So it leads to the question, would you be upset if the Astros made no improvements at the deadline?
Yep, I would. And I've said this before, and I said that even as we got ready for the season. And I said, I'm going to wait to see what they do between now and the trade deadline. And I believe this team is too good to not do anything and stand completely pat. And I think that things have a way of sorting themselves out. And just like when we started seeing the areas of concern on this ball club, there wasn't a laundry list, but the list did grow because we didn't know that Yuli was going to fall off the planet. We didn't know that Bregman was going to get off to a slow start. We weren't sure what was going to happen at center field or shortstop for that matter, though it's worked out in your favor. And then we've hyperanalyzed the catching position and how much value offense has as opposed to the quality defense and the way you control a pitching staff, especially because the rest of the lineup is good enough to basically overcome that. And so, and on top of that, my number one priority with the bullpen. So you know that there were areas. Now they're sorting themselves out more and more to realize we're not going to worry about Bregman. And it's very clear after this series alone that we're not going to touch Maldonado as the starting catcher. You got a guy in your own system that's come back in Jake Meyers that at least short term you get to evaluate. That could be a guy that resolves center field.
Mm-hmm.
That leads you to either two different areas. You still got to improve the pen, and what the hell are you doing at first base?
See, I'm of the thought where I don't believe that they have to in order to be a World Series contender. In fact, I think they showed you that over the four-game series. They went into the house that Alex Rodriguez built and took 2-4 against the Yankees and should have won 4-4.
That's one of the – and two teams in the National League. But that is, without a question, those were the two best teams in the American
League. I would agree. And if that's not the ALCS, we're all being robbed as baseball fans because that should be a 7-game series. But you just went into the Bronx and took 2-4, could have won all 4-4, all on the road. Like, I mean, that's what you want to do in a 7-game series, right? You want to split on the road in a 7-game series. So the Astros just showed that they could do that already currently as they are constructed. So I don't believe that they have to. And I can live with it mostly But there's some areas where I need to see improvement. For me, it's namely first base. Because the bullpen, like, would I hate an elite arm to the back end of the bullpen? No, I wouldn't. But I also believe in the numbers, and I also believe that they're pretty good. And they also have some arms that are coming back that could help you more. Like, you have a surplus in the pitching rotation. Using those guys in the bullpen would be challenging, but would help you. Lance McCullers Jr., however you use him, would be challenging how, but it's going to help you. If they ever call up Hunter Brown, which is a big league arm, I don't know how they're going to use him, but he could help you. So they have a lot of pitching where
Paredes could help you.
Anoli could help you. Abreu, if he develops and gets the mind stuff figured out and they trust him, could help you.
Especially because those two guys have above average fastballs, which is very key in baseball these days. Yes.
It's not Maton where he's trying to deceive you, right? Their stuff can overpower you.
Yep.
So the pitching staff, I wouldn't hate an arm, but I don't think it's essential. I don't think it's a necessity. I think it's more of a luxury. First base to me, and look, the Astros just took 2-4 against the Yankees. I don't believe you can win a World Series with what you're getting offensively at first base with what Yuli's producing so far for you. And I think it was a terrible sign for Yuli that they sent down two center fielders once Jake Meyers came back, with Chaz McCormick and Jose Siri being sent down to Sugar Land, yet they kept J.J. Mattejevic, which they have not done that all year. The first time that they keep J.J. Mattejevic over both Siri and Chaz whenever Jake Meyers comes back. I don't think that bodes well for Yuli Gurriel. So to me, like, relief pitching, like, that's probably on my top three of areas where I would like them to add a piece. But first base to me is first place by a mile.
Depends on what you get.
On an area you have
to.
I mean, you can say that about every position, though.
It does, but I think relief pitchers, you can get the right deal and get a guy to do what you need to have done.
I think you
more
can do
so
that
than a guy that can hit at first base.
But a 3-month rental, like, for somebody, like, if it's like Mancini's on the final year of his deal, Josh Bell, like, I don't think that the price for a rental would be all that high. Like, I'm not talking about a guy that has 3 years of club control and is an MVP
right.
level.
No, I get what you're saying, but still, you got to pay to get what you need. And I think that teams knowing that you're going to be not desperate, but you're a contending team that really has a glaring need at first base, might try to up the ante and the price on you.
Well, the same thing for relievers, though. I mean, it's the same across the board.
It just depends. Like, if you get one of the bottom of the barrel teams that is already out of the playoffs, look at the Pirates year after year
Baltimore
after year.
Baltimore with Mancini, though.
Okay, you're right. And I get it, but because they don't have, it's like the Texans with Deshaun. That might be one of the only two assets that they truly have that they can still get something for as they build around a young pitching staff. So between Mullins and Mancini, they're probably going to be a little more bullish on what they get in return, as opposed to the Tigers or the Pirates that seem to have like a revolving door of they get good so we can get rid of them.
Yeah.
So maybe you can get someone a little cheaper. I don't know. Because I feel the same way like you're saying. I think what they're doing with Mattejevic right now is what we want to see done with Abreu. They just want to see, look, he's got two hits in his career in the major leagues. They're both home runs. But he gives you more offensive capabilities and possibilities than what we've seen long-term out of Chaz and Siri. So let's give him a little run. See what he's got. Can he hit on this level
can
or not?
Replace Yuli.
And if he does, then he gives Dusty options. If he doesn't, I think by the time we get near the playoff roster, one of those two guys in center field are going to be back.
713-780-ESPN. Would you be upset if the Astros made no improvements at the deadline? 713-780-3776. Also, rather have a combined no-hitter against the Yankees or a complete game no-hitter against anyone else? And who would be the most valuable piece to have a breakout season for the Texans? We kick it around with the Wheelhouse Minutes. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Cody Stutes is hanging out with us. Have a good weekend, Cody. Looks like you did. So you had a good weekend.
Fat joke?
How would that be a fat joke?
I don't know. I just wonder if it's a fat joke.
The answer is no, it's not a fat joke. He looks rested.
He looks the same.
No, he looks rested.
He doesn't look like he's glowing with sunshine like he was out tanning or
I'm
anything.
Seeing less of his body, which is always a good thing.
Oh, yeah. The last time. Yeah.
Well, the last time after he busted our chops. I'm still pissed off about the fact that I had the logic right and the wrong selection for that damn said it.
That's another reason he had a great weekend. He was resting on his championship belt the entire weekend. And a weekend as a champion is much better than a weekend not as the champion.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You're right about that.
That's why I was asking you. How was your weekend?
It was fantastic.
Pretty good.
So Will and Dylan. A very expensive restaurant, and I didn't pay for it.
Limousine riding, jet sitting, all that stuff?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much top of Space Mountain and all that good stuff.
I could tell. I hope that you're enjoying it because your reign's coming to an end very soon.
I don't think it will. I think I'll continue to be champion.
You
don't,
we know how you think. We'll just see.
True champions defend their title. Anybody can win it. We've seen that.
Sure.
True champions can defend the strap.
And the greatest of the great tell you what they're going to do and then do it. And I'm going to defend this title for a very, very long time.
Unfortunately, that championship rematch isn't coming until July 8th because Brendan's going to be out of town for July 1st.
Cobos Q coming up, by the way.
That's right. We'll be out there this Friday. Summer Circuit takes us to Cobos Q and Edo. We'll be right there bright and early, 7 a.m. with the bench. So come by, hang out. Enjoy Cobo's incredible food and full bar. Get your long weekend started with some fun. You can register to win a new grill, too, by the way, from the Texas Star Grill Shop. And weekend getaway from Lafayette Travel this Friday. See you at Cobos Q, 2012 Rush Street, a short walk from Minute Maid Park. All
you
right,
guys,
Coach.
Are the closers on that event instead of the openers.
Hopefully we're a little better than Ryan Stressly in Game 1. Hopefully we're Game 3 Ryan Pressly and not Game 1 Ryan Stressly.
Gotcha.
I think that's what we're going to try to do. Speaking of which, that third game with Ryan Pressly, his alter ego Ryan Stressly did not show up in Game 3. Would you rather have a combined no-hitter against the Yankees or a complete game no-hit against anyone else in Major League Baseball?
All right, I'm going to answer this, and then I'm going to have a question to follow up on this. I'd rather have the combined no-hitter. Now, my question is, are there some people that don't recognize combined no-hitters as no-hitters?
Oh, now, Yankee fans. And I'm not even making that up. One of my best friends, who's like my little brother, is a massive Yankee fan. That is the first thing that he went to, and he overplayed it, just kept bringing it back. It doesn't count. It doesn't count. It doesn't count.
Okay. All right. See, that's what I was – I know there are some, like, very, very old-school baseball people that don't believe combined no-hitters are no-hitters. Here's what I would say. When the other team doesn't get a hit and it was because of your pitching staff and you win that game, that's a fantastic feeling. I had to put that last caveat in there because sometimes you can throw a no-hitter and lose, i.e. the Reds earlier this year.
So,
it's a fantastic feeling. And when it's that team, when it's as good as they have been and the history between those two teams in the past 5 years, yeah, go ahead and give me that combined no-hitter against the Yankees.
Did you talk to Jake about it after the no-hitter?
I did not.
Okay, I was wondering how he felt about it.
Good question.
After, you know, they got no hit. Who doesn't? Like, Yankee fans obviously aren't recognizing it because they
multiple,
hate the Astros.
I have another Yankee fan still in the big city, still a massive Yankee fan that was communicating with me throughout the weekend that acknowledged that it was a great game pitched,
yeah,
but still didn't want to acknowledge the no-hitter as being a true no-hitter.
Let's eliminate idiot Yankee fans for a moment because
gotcha.
they're all bad.
Because they just keep coming. They're like cockroaches. They just
I've
keep
never met
out
an intelligent
woodwork.
Yankee fan. But whenever, like, who would say it's not a no-hitter? Who wouldn't recognize that as a no-hitter?
Well, I know there's some advanced analytics people that I've seen on social media say that they're not no-hitters, and then there's some old heads in, like, the baseball media world, they're like, that's not a no-hitter.
Idiots that think that nipples can be doorbells also have a tendency to think that it wasn't a no-hitter. Oh, those are Yankee fans, too. But the but the other thing is, when you look at it, the seven-inning doubleheader game no-hitter isn't, but a combined no-hitter is, as it's viewed by Major League Baseball. Because remember, Mad Bum had a seven-inning no-hitter that Major League Baseball would not acknowledge
sure.
a year ago,
yeah.
but yet a combined no-hitter is acknowledged. That is kind of weird.
When you have zero hits in the hit column, that is a no-hitter. Like, I'm sorry, but that is my
So you'd give Mad Bomb one for seven?
Yeah, but I put an asterisk next to it.
Yeah, because he's
put
a solo.
It's a footnote. It's a footnote. You have a little asterisk next to it, and you say it was a seven-inning game. But yeah, absolutely. If the other team did not get hits, that is a no-hitter.
The team has been no-hit.
The team has been no-hit.
By the opposing team.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I do agree with, like, some of the notion that one pitcher doing it is more difficult than a combined no-hitter. I agree with that because your best stuff, you know, you're coming in like a reliever with a sub-2.5 ERA, much easier to no-hit a team as opposed to a Christian Javier going back out there for the 8th and 9th over 120 pitches. So I do think it is more difficult for one pitcher to do it, but still, it is a no-hitter.
Isn't a no-hitter inherently a team recognition as well, too? Because
it can be.
It is. It can't be, but it's more so. It's
not always, like the pitcher strikes out the other 27
They always say
guys.
There's like those two key defensive plays that are, that always pop up. But for the most part, it's an individual accomplishment.
Sure, sure. The pitcher gets the primary share of, hey, the no-hitter was accomplished. But it's very much a team accomplishment.
I would agree. But, I mean, there is also like a governor to how much that defense can help or hurt you. Because an error, as we saw, Alex Bregman, doesn't affect the hit column.
But am I the old school guy that think, I don't think a set, I think because it is more of an individualistic award with team help, I believe a seven-inning no-hitter is not a no-hitter. I believe that because
a seven-inning no-hitter.
But Jeremy, hear me out, because just the same way you say that, an official Major League Baseball game is normally nine innings.
Not that year.
That's why there has to be an asterisk and then some over that one.
I would agree with that.
Yeah,
I'm cool with an asterisk.
Because I don't really like that.
So combined no-hitter greater than seven-inning no-hitter.
Yeah, 27 outs versus 21 outs.
Agreed.
Yes, absolutely.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
But then basically Javier should have gotten a asterisk.
Well, I mean, I think he does whenever you throw in the fact that it was combined. I mean, the fact, once you go Javier.
Sure.
But once you go Javier dash Neris dash Presley.
But it
that
wasn't
is,
in a doubleheader game.
It wasn't a conclusion right. of the game. Yeah.
That's where that's the gray area.
Okay.
Cody, who do you think would be the most valuable piece to break out for the Texans in 2022?
Not named Davis
can't
Mills.
Can't go quarterback.
Ooh.
Can't go quarterback.
You guys almost left the caveat.
Yes.
Out. Yes. Scream Davis Mills.
Don't let the caveat out of the bag.
It's got to be somebody on offense because this is not going to be a super impressive offense without somebody stepping up. We know what Brandon Cooks is. There's no more breakout left to Brandon Cooks, so we know what he is. So it'd have to be a wide receiver. Typically, those wide receivers, if they've got some juice, you see it early on in their career. Nico Collins was hurt a bunch last year. So we go Nico Collins just from could he do it? Yes, he could. I'm not going to say anybody in the tight end room because I don't believe anybody in the tight end room can break out. So I'll go Nico Collins and then just hope that if Nico Collins and Brandon Cooks both have really good years that everything's worked out for this offense.
See, I don't think you can go anybody else aside from Stingley or Grenard.
I see. I'm going to pack up my stuff and let you guys hack this one out because you don't see that the way he does.
Well, I think we look at valuable more like differently, though. I think that's where the hang-up's at. Because you're looking valuable to the team's success in 2022, I think.
What's a breakout for a rookie cornerback? Is it maybe Patrick Surtain's season from last
probably,
year?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
Because now you have an elite cornerback, and I put more value in the corner than the receiver. And then the other one that I think you could talk about is Grenard, because if he turns into a 14, 15 sack guy, now
that's
you have
Diggs
a legitimate
too, in Dallas.
Edge rusher.
Was a breakout year.
Yeah.
Diggs is weird because he had tons of interceptions, but then the Pro Football Focus grade isn't that high.
Yeah.
It's like, huh, that's odd.
But boy, he got all the pub in the world for that, the picks.
Interceptions are sexy, man.
I feel like they could put together a group effort on defense to overall improve to a level where they're much better than last year. They're going to need an individual to be really, really good on offense to really get this offense to the next level. Obviously, you've left out Davis Mills, so I can't pick him.
See, I think the defense will be better than the offense, so I see your rationale there.
I said Stingley because of the fact that the receiver position has been, and wide receiver ones, not just in salary, but the importance that goes with it, that if you've got a guy that can lock them down and be on an island all by himself, it has a massive amount of value.
Yeah, Stingley's a great answer to that. Probably be my number two right behind Nico Collins.
All right, very good. Did you see the fight with Seattle and the Angels yesterday? Oh, I loved it.
I loved every bit of it because they're both just got the red ass because both teams are underachieving like a mother. But I also think that Scott Service.
Oh, he's a crybaby.
He's
a crybaby.
He's such a B word that it's mind numbing to me because of the fact that his guys started all this by headhunting twice, but then the minute the retaliation started coming, he's like, get him out of here. This is brutal. And then he starts pointing to his head. Bro, you went after Mike Trout's gourd. And you went after the two best hitters arguably on their team, not named Otani. Like, get over yourself.
That guy's trying to save his job. He's trying to make sure he keeps getting the paychecks keep coming in.
I think he's my least favorite Astro catcher since Mitch Molesky. I think he's climbing up that. But did you hear the Seattle fan that ordered
pizza for
– He ordered a pizza.
For the guy that got hit in the ass.
Yeah, he ordered a pizza for him, and the driver somehow got it to him.
Oh, it did?
It somehow got there, and then they put his Venmo, I think – like on the internet, and all of these Seattle fans are tipping this pizza delivery guy that got a pizza home.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse?
Winker got hit in the ass.
Jesse Winker.
Winker, yeah. It was a lady that sent the pizza.
He didn't get hit in the winker.
A lady
hit in the ass.
But it was a man who delivered it.
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm clarifying all that for you.
Yeah.
What's coming up on the Wheelhouse?
Lots of fun stuff to go on the Wheelhouse. This Texans lawsuit thing that's popped up here, it feels like there's some wild claims in there. We're going to have to go over and talk about that. This Astros weekend is interesting. What do we learn about this team based off of four games against the best team in the American League?
Sounds very good. All that and more coming up next with the Wheelhouse. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse next. ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.